Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing dying destitute, why you should spend all your money before you die.
This is the kind of episode that I think when folks saw the title and they heard you say it, they probably were scratching their head a little bit. They're saying, wait, dying destitute, what does that mean?
Yeah, you don't want to die in the poorhouse necessarily, right? That's not your idea of a good time in your 80s.
No, that's true. I'm going to start this one off with a quote because Andrew Carnegie, the great steel baron from many hundreds of years ago at this point, he had a quote and he said that if you die rich, you die disgraced.
By the way, he only died 100 years ago. Okay, 1919.
Thank you very much. He was born like 200 years ago.
Yeah, that's true.
but there is a lot to be said about that quote. If you die rich, you die disgraced. There are several other folks who have sort of taken up that banner. They've taken up that call to talk about this, how maybe we shouldn't be amassing these great fortunes only to, you know, pass them on to our heirs, whatever it is that you choose to do with that money.
And or so that to die and basically leave the money earmarked for something when you didn't get to see the benefit.
Exactly.
In your life.
Yeah. So that actually is what we're going to talk about today. That is our argument. We're going to talk about why it is maybe you should consider dying destitute, and actually not actually destitute.
We'll get into the finer points.
You should be able to cover the bare necessities of life maybe by the time you are reaching your later years.
Yeah, but those simple bare necessities. Yeah, man.
That's like beer.
Yes.
But that is what we're going to talk about
the
today.
Beer necessities. I like that. Well, yeah, before we get to that, Matt, I want to mention one quick thing, and I just found out about this the other day. One of our mutual friends, they run a nonprofit that we like to financially support from time to time. And when we give via their website, if I give via credit card, I'm going to be charged like a 3% transaction fee, which means
you're always running the figures like, all right, 3%, when are we going to get it? No, it's not worth it.
Not worth it. It's almost never worth it unless you're like at the last ditch effort to meet that minimum spend threshold to get a bonus, because almost never do the rewards outweigh the cost of that fee.
Exactly.
But, and I'm not sure if this is always going to be the case or if it's just a limited time thing, but some nonprofits take donations via Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And Facebook, at least for the time being, covers all the transaction fees if you donate it with a credit card. And so I was like,
there
hey,
is no additional charge.
No additional charge.
At all.
And not
when you told me this, it kind of blew my mind. I was like, wait, what?
And oftentimes when you see that, what's happening is there's a charge story for the nonprofit that you're donating to. So they have to eat some of that, which sucks. Like, you don't want to do that either. You don't want to stick them with the bill.
Yeah. But sometimes they put it out there and they let you know that. Like the group that we're talking about, I forget the name of the organization that they, like, it's like cheese.
I think something. It's called, no, I think it's called Give Butter.
Butter.
Yeah.
Close enough. That's right.
But it's slick. It's a great way to donate. Yeah. But they can.
And they'll ask you, saying, hey, do you also want to cover the fee associated with this? That way we're receiving all of the money.
If not, they're not getting the full amount of your donation.
Exactly. But in this case,
if you want the best of both worlds, you donate via Facebook. You get to donate with a credit card, obviously, paying it off on time and in full at the end of the month. So
we're not telling you to finance your charity.
No, don't finance your charity, but at least donate and get a little perk on top of it, which is
get those miles, get those points, get that cash back. But I'll link to the, like, where Facebook outlines how it is that they don't charge folks, and because they do charge if you have a personal fundraiser.
Yeah.
And so say you're like, oh, broke my leg, whatever, help me to,
like, GoFundMe style.
Yeah, exactly. So they'll take a percentage of that, different amounts depending on whatever country you live in. But when it comes to actual nonprofits, it is super cool that they don't charge anything. And so the bigger question is, why are they doing it? And of course, it's just to get more people to
spend time on the platform, get used to it,
get used to the metaverse.
And then at some point, they'll probably start charging. But I will say, if your favorite nonprofit accepts donations via Facebook, this is a great thing. And if they don't, maybe you might want to be like, hey,
reach out to me. Exactly. I actually reached out to a friend. I was just like, hey, man, did you know that this was the case? Maybe it's time to start accepting donations via Facebook. And he's like, well, I'm not sure if it's going to be worth our time.
And you're like, well, I'll donate 10 grand. And he's like, well, okay, I'll do it.
Please set it up, because that way I can run my giving through Facebook. I would appreciate that. Yeah. But of course, it's up to the individual organization. Yeah. But I think that's a great little tip. Glad that
when
you
I saw that, I was thrilled.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm making an extra like $80 on this donation, man. Like without having to do anything extra. So.
$80, more like $240 if you're using that towards flights.
Yeah, that's true. No, that's a good
3X,
point.
3X, baby.
Yeah. And by the way, again, we have our new credit card tool up on the site at howtomoney.com.
Speaking of credit cards.
Yeah. So it's just literally up there, the top right-hand corner of the homepage, and it will hopefully make helping you find the best credit card for you super simple, super easy, based on the benefits you're looking for.
Yeah, based on the perks that you're wanting more of in your life. Yeah, that's howtomoney.com/credit cards.
Yep. All right, Matt, let's move on. Let's mention the beer we're having on this episode. This is Raspberry Blush by McKellar Brewing. The can art, as always with the McKellar beer, is dope, and we'll give our thoughts on the actual liquid inside the can at the end of the episode. But for now, let's talk about dying destitute, Matt. Let's
do it. Let's die destitute, man.
let's do it. We're blood packed right now.
Honestly, I am way closer to doing that in reality than before we did a bunch of reading and were preparing for this episode.
Yeah. No,
I truly am closer to that point of view than ever before.
Exactly. I think same here. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that Carnegie quote that you mentioned earlier. And just kind of as we've thought about this, it makes sense to try. You don't want to necessarily die with a ton of money in your bank account, in your investment account. And Matt, I'm not a woodworker, as you know, but we've all heard the phrase measure twice, cut once. It makes a lot of sense, right? Because if you're off on your measurements just by a little bit, you can easily ruin the piece of wood or furniture that you're working on. And let's say you maybe accidentally, because you only measured once, you lop off 6 inches from a table leg when you should have trimmed 6 centimeters. That table is going to be wobbly, right? And so, yeah, I'm no Ron Swanson or anything like that. I don't have a dope mustache and speak completely in libertarian sayings or anything like that. But I think this analogy holds. And many of us are measuring our lives, we would say, with the wrong measuring sticks, which is leading to skewed results. And this episode is going to be all about the personal and practical ways to think about the accumulation of and spending of your money. Because, yeah, some How to Money listeners, you might be living too frugally, right? Focusing too much on optimizing every cent for long-term success to be able to see outsized returns over time. Whereas other listeners might find themselves with a need right now to ramp up their savings and their investing habits. But no matter where you are on that spectrum, hopefully this episode can help you find the right measuring device. And so this episode is going to point to what that right measuring device is so that you're using your money most effectively in the here and now and as you get older too.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, this is a personal finance show, right? Like, every single week we talk about either earning more money, increasing our savings, or investing wisely in a way that is going to yield you the highest returns down the road. The best part about talking about money day in and day out is the fact that it's something that we can easily measure. And so if you're listening, you know how much money it's going to cost you to fill up your gas tank. Yeah. Like, you know what your salary is. You've probably got at least a general idea of how much money you've got stashed away in your retirement accounts. But this is where money, how it's sort of a blessing and a curse. Because it's a blessing because it's quantifiable. And so that makes it easier to make changes where necessary, where you're wanting to see some improvements when it comes to your money. But it's also a curse, because if you are overly focused on this upward trajectory of your account balance, if your life satisfaction, if it's purely determined by how much you've got in the bank, or you know, even if a bear market, if it gets you down, well, if that's the case, we would argue that you are incorrectly using money as the main measurement in your life. And so this is coming from the two personal finance guys, you know, and you got to be careful as to how much power you grant that thing in your life. And it can be easy to become, for all of us to become, overly focused on our money.
Yeah, you can start to look at everything through the lens of money, much to the detriment of other things in your life.
Yep.
And that wouldn't be good, right? But it can be difficult, I would say, to pull out of this way of thinking too. Let's say you have started to use money as the filter for what you're seeing most of your major life decisions. It's hard to shift gears and switch to a way of reasoning and living where you're less focused on accumulating mm-hmm. more, or increasing your frugality to the extreme, right? When instead you should be focusing maybe on ways to spend your money in ways that bring the most value. Like, it is hard for people to make that transition, especially the longer you've been doing it, from, let's say, a lifetime of building up solid savings habits and living fairly frugally, to then feeling free enough to spend your money towards things that you value. And, you know, whether your personal habits skew more towards investing like a crazy person with an inability to spend or part with the money you've saved, or buying stuff just because Instagram said that you should, we've all got to be reminded of the truth that money is just a tool, right? It's an important one, of course, one of the most important ones out there. But there are lots of things in life that are more important than money.
Yes.
And we have to keep that framework in mind, even as we're trying to get better with our money, trying to save more of it.
Exactly. And by the way, this episode is for everyone out there. This isn't just an episode for those who are further down the road, for those who are maybe looking to retire in the next, you know, several years. Because this is a question that we need to be asking ourselves all throughout our lives, not just at the tail end. This makes me think of our episode with Wes Moss about the habits of healthy retirees. And because he found that the happiest ones had meaningful hobbies that they were engaged in throughout their lives. They were able to dedicate more of their time to their favorite pursuits when they quit work. But folks who were just hoping to find meaning within retirement, like once they arrived at that point, but who hadn't done any work towards that goal during their working years, they typically had a much harder transition into retirement. So we bring this up because picking up hobbies, developing relationships, it's a whole lot easier to continue at that age than it is to start. It's easy for us to kind of fall into the same old ruts that we started when we were younger, right? Like, you might be 25 years old and you're thinking, oh, I got plenty of time to change my ways. But the habits that we get into at an early stage in our life, we're pretty big believers that that we continue down that path. These are behaviors that we perpetuate. And it can be more difficult than you think to break some of these habits after a few years of professional life.
Yeah. And it just, it becomes more difficult to get them to start those habits the older you get. Let's say you want to exercise. So it's a whole lot easier to start at 25 before like you've gotten ridiculously out of shape than to start when you're 45 and you've kind of been used to being like a couch potato or something mm-hmm. like that, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the effort that it takes is that much more. And that's why starting those habits earlier is so powerful.
Totally.
But just in case you need some more convincing that this is an important thing to talk about, well, let's touch on some of the reasons to start addressing the question of spending all your money before you die. And the first one we need to talk about is that you don't know how long you're going to live. Yep. Unless maybe that psychic down the street was right after all when they read your tarot cards, although that's unlikely. But the truth is, any of us could get hit by a bus tomorrow, right? You could work your butt off, hit all your financial goals, only to find that you croak the day you've accomplished them. And I promise this episode is not meant to be discouraging. We're just trying to look at the reality of the hand that we've all been dealt. And the hand that we've all been dealt is certain death at some point in the future. None of us knows how long we're going to live. And it's an important part of the equation for how we think about the spending, saving, and investing conundrum, because if we're putting too much effort in one of those baskets, we might be shortchanging ourselves with the assumption that we're going to live till the ripe old age of 105 without having the actual knowledge that that's going to happen.
Yeah. And, you know, additionally, like, who knows what kind of health that we're going to have, and not just 50 years down the road from now, but even like 5 years from now. For example, none of us assumed we would experience a global pandemic.
Wasn't on my radar.
Lost close friends, relatives, even parents. But even without a pandemic, you know, we are faced with just this potential array of different health issues that we might face, many of which we can't control. Granted, you know, eating healthy, exercising, these are all things that can help. But even those two necessities don't prevent just a slew of crappy health possibilities that might occur down the road.
Yeah, makes me think of a Community episode where Jeff Winger refuses to eat a donut even. Like, he won't stray at all from his healthy habits. But then something happens that he can't control health-wise, and he's like, I think he maybe had to get a colonoscopy or something like that, I forget. And realizing that, like, all these things could kill him, so why not at least occasionally eat the donut?
He just, like, throws the towel in.
Yeah. It's like, and not all the way, right? Yeah, like, yeah. But he's like, okay, cool. I now realize I'm not in complete full control over what happens to me, even though I'm trying to make wise steps.
It's a good lesson to learn. In Parks and Rec, Chris, what's his name?
Like Chris Pratt?
Not Chris Pratt, like the character, like literally.
Oh yeah.
Rob Lowe's character. Chris Traeger. He had a similar, I don't know, it's a nice character. Maybe to include sitcoms, but like I remember him talking about, like, he's like, I can't catch a cold. I have a finely tuned body. And in a similar way, there are things that are out of our control.
Yeah.
As much as we would like to think that we have complete control over the health outcomes in our life.
Yeah, for sure. And just, yeah, one more thing that we just don't have as much control of as we'd like to think is our relationships. And it's worth considering, because when we're talking about how to think about your money, well, the people who are in your life, you're not promised tomorrow with them either. So who knows which people you're going to have around and for how long. And it reminds me of this quote, Matt, from Deion Sanders, legendary baseball and NFL player. And he said, some friends are for a reason, some are for a season, and some are for forever. And I realize that this is actually a terrible quote, but I still love it for some reason. It's stuck with me for a long time.
That's a good quote.
It's okay.
You don't like it?
Well, it's just kind of goofy sounding. But
but it's very 90s sounding. But yeah. It's also true. Like, if
it came from Deion, man. He was a man of the 90s.
For a reason. It's like, for business reasons, there's things that we're trying to achieve. Some for a season, there's shorter periods. But yeah, then there's some friends who we keep around forever. I like it.
Well, none of us are
I've
promised.
I've never heard of that
quote. None of us are promised tomorrow. And our friendships aren't promised to be around for years to come either, which, as best friends, Matt, I sure hope we're around for a lot longer.
Fingers crossed.
Together, my friend. But yeah, does that reframe maybe how you think about, you know, where you choose to live or whether you buy a plane ticket to head home for the holidays? That should at least be a meaningful factor. So when we're talking about spending, well, spending money on relationships, not knowing how long, let's say, your aging parents are going to be around, then it might impact how you allocate the dollars for your budget.
That's right.
And it might influence you to spend more now, as opposed to like saving and investing that money for the future, realizing that those relationships won't be there in perpetuity.
Exactly. But just like the Jeff Winger character in Community, you don't throw in the towel, right? Like, this doesn't mean that you are thinking, okay, I might die tomorrow, so YOLO, I'm going to spend all of the money I have, because, well, in reality, you might not die tomorrow.
All right, I'm going to start eating a dozen donuts every single morning just because, like, I'm not promised tomorrow. Like, you don't go all the way to that extreme.
Yeah, it wouldn't do him good were he to do that. And so that's the difficult question, right? Like, where is it that we draw the line? And interestingly enough, that's actually what we want to get to right after this break. We're going to talk through how it is for you to decide what it is that you are going to spend your money on. We'll get to that right after this.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah, and here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to PolicyGenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's PolicyGenius.com.
All right, Matt, let's keep going. Let's talk about Dying Destitute, and which I think is a great name. It's, I don't know, it creates like a visceral image in your mind that maybe, all right, listen, I've got zero pennies to my name now on my deathbed, and
dying happy.
Well, I don't know if dying destitute would be happy necessarily.
But I mean, that's the goal, is for you to
have spent it all on awesome stuff, the
exactly,
right things that move the needle, and not be dying with a Scrooge McDuck fortune that you leave to God knows who. Well, the reality of dying destitute,
your three nephews.
That's right, of course. the truth is that it's not really as easy to pull off as it might seem, right? And so to me, the heart of this endeavor is to maximize all that you can get out of life, not just for yourself though, but for others around you too. And so if your goal is something akin to increasing the life enjoyment of yourself and everyone around you, I don't know, I think that could be a reasonable measuring stick.
Totally.
Maybe a better measuring stick than amassing as much money as possible.
Sure.
And we would say it's certainly a better goal to have than like $10 million by retirement age. Or even as our recent guest, Cody Sanchez, mentioned, Matt, she mentioned she wanted to be a billionaire. That was kind of one of the measuring sticks she was using. And she had so much great advice in that episode about buying small business. But that was one thing where I was like, okay, we're just not on the same page on that. Like I have zero desire to become a billionaire. That to me is not a measuring stick that matters. But yes, some of us, I would say, in our attempts to optimize our personal finances, we can overdo it, right? Causing us to pinch more pennies than we should, which actually ends up cramping our enjoyment. So finding that happy medium is easier said than done, but we think it's really important to really hone in on that.
That's right. Yeah, actually, one thing we talked recently about on a Friday Flight episode was that was the life cycle model. That's what we called it. This is the idea that pushes folks to smooth out their consumption and savings habits over time. It suggests that folks who are early on in their careers, they should maybe get a little comfier with debt. Don't put so much pressure on themselves to save. And the economists who suggest this method, they think that you can just pay off all that pesky debt and then just save aggressively in your late 30s and 40s.
Turning over a new leaf almost in no time at all.
When your income is a good bit higher. And honestly, again, this sounds very much like something that an economist would come up with, something that works well on paper, but in reality, it's harder to pull off in real life. But still, there is at least some helpful wisdom with this line of thinking, because if we refuse to take on any sorts of debt out there that would help us to get, for instance, like the college degree that could increase our earnings for the rest of our lives, then in that case, I think we would be a bit myopic.
Yeah, I agree. This is one of those propositions that looks good on a graph or a chart, but with the unpredictability of life, it's harder to pull off. And again, I like what you said, Matt, about the college degree. Like, we still want folks to be careful with college debt, but using debt strategically, like we talked about in a recent episode 566, it allows us to actually accelerate our personal and financial progress. And so let's say somebody, one of our listeners wants to become a doctor. Well, waiting until you've saved up all the money to pay cash for that degree doesn't make much sense, right? You'll be waiting a long, long time, and you'll become a doctor at the ripe old age of 56. And you're wasting precious, high-earning years of your future career if you opt to forego debt in order to pay cash for that degree. But we would say also at the same time, saving up to pay cash makes sense for a whole lot of things. But if you've only got one life to live, right, using debt strategically to finance assets that are going to boost your wealth and increase your earnings is a savvy approach. We'll talk a little bit more about how to think about spending in light of the reality that we don't necessarily want to die with heaps of money. Plus, we don't know when our dying date is actually going to be, Matt.
That's right.
Let's talk about spending out of that perspective.
Yeah, man, let's do it. I think the biggest thing that we'll want to consider is what's going to bring us the greatest ROI, the return on investment from each dollar that we do decide to allot for consumption. And so by doing this, this is going to allow us to become more conscious spenders, and we think that that's vitally important. And so one of the first sort of pointers that we want to put out there for folks, and this isn't necessarily going to be groundbreaking, but we want folks to consider spending more on experiences. But we want you to not, again, embrace the YOLO lifestyle, but we want you to do it the right way. We are big fans of vacations, right? Like, they allow you to book something. You're able to look forward to going on that trip for a while. You maybe have fun for a week or so, and then you're able to look back on pictures. You're able to have those memories for the rest of your life.
Reminiscing about some of our favorite vacations.
All the fun you had.
It's the best. How often do we talk about our trip, us two couples, to Ireland? We talk about it all the time. It was such a good time.
Yep.
Specifically, well worth the money.
Too many stories to get into actually right now.
The one where you push me into cow poop is one.
I was thinking of the other one when we're playing darts.
I think we might. Well, I don't know.
There's no way we share that story here on the podcast.
Right.
That is one. That's
episode 1000.
That's an in-person story to share when we're with some listeners at a brewery, that kind of thing. But trips and vacations like this are such a solid recipe for spending money effectively because it creates loads of time for enjoyment. But we often think that spending on experiences means that it's got to cost you a lot of money. And I don't think that that's necessarily true as well, because just imagine like a three-day camping trip with your family or with a couple of close friends. Like, that could cost you close to nothing. Like, literally, you're just paying for the cost of gas, maybe some s'more supplies. Maybe
definitely some s'mores.
Bottle of whiskey. I prefer just, you know, sitting around the fire, being able to do that. And so it's important to push back that going on a trip, going on a vacation has to be this, you know, this massive thing that you are saving for months and months or even for years. And I think it's important to push back against the idea that we see more folks leaning towards, which is experience hopping. I feel like that's more something that folks have a tendency to do in our culture. And, you know, that's when we try to move on to the next just fun thing as quickly as possible. I think if that, when that's the case, we're often missing out on enjoying the current experience. We're not present. We're not soaking up every last, like I imagine like you just taking that slice of bread and you're just wiping every last little bit of gravy off that plate. Like that is how we want you to approach some of the different experiences in life.
Yeah. And I think that that's where van life sometimes falls short, right? Is the hashtag van life is because it's, there's always a next experience. It's tough to fully soak in and appreciate the experience you're having in that day because you got to hop in and go somewhere else the next day. And that's, while that's exciting, it also gets like endlessly boring to see something new almost every day. Like for months and months and months on end.
Joel, throwing some of that van life.
I am, man. Like, I don't know.
You're listening. You got a van.
Do we have any van life influencer listeners? I don't know.
I'm not thinking of anybody in particular. But I'm sure there's somebody out there who's just like, oh, I love my van.
I mean, I think we've seen more articles lately about people who lived the van life lifestyle. And like, it's not all it's chalked up to be because it does get a little monotonous. It gets a little difficult to stomach after a while. I miss some sort of sense of community and place.
I think that would be the hardest thing unless you're literally in a caravan where you got multiple friends driving across the country.
Yeah, and even in that, it can become that, like you said, experience hopping, where you're not fully appreciating the place where you are. And we would say it's smart to start planning ahead for those experiences too. What is it that you feel like you just have to do right before you die or in life? Like, what are the biggest experiential priorities for you in the coming months and years that are higher on your bucket list? You know, what kind of money is it going to take to make that happen? Instead of hoping that it's going to come to fruition or having it maybe in the back of your mind somewhere like, oh, wouldn't that be nice? We would say to start planning for it because, yeah, if it involves, let's say, doing epic stuff with your kids, well, at what age is that experience optimal?
Makes me think about like going to Disney World. That's something, y'all have done that, but it's something that we haven't done yet with our family. And like, we're like thinking ahead a little bit because I only want to go once. I don't want to have to go back multiple times.
So you want to hit all four kids at a reasonable age
to go. Exactly, because if we get too old with the oldest and
the magic's gone.
Yeah, the magic can be gone. But if we go too soon with the youngest, he's not even going to remember. Right. Like, his brain needs to be developed enough that he remembers going because he's past the point.
Because we're not paying for him if he's going to forget
it. Because if you're two or younger, it's free, right?
That's right.
Like, if once you hit the 3-year-old mark, it's no longer free. And so I'm just like, all right, we're paying regardless. So we better make sure that he remembers.
Yeah.
But I mean, with all of these different things, I think what's core with some of these different experiences is the fact that you're doing it with other people. Right. I think that is at the root of why it is that experiences are so popular. Like, I feel like they have experiences. Oh, you do experiences over stuff because like there's been a rallying cry behind experiences. And if you aren't able to identify what it is about the experience that is leading to more joy and more happiness in individuals' lives, I think you can completely miss it. That just like, you know, we're saying with like experience hopping, if you aren't able to identify that, man, oftentimes I think it's the memories that you're able to make with another person. And it just turns out that some of these different vacations and trips and experiences like this allow you to, it'll basically allow space. It literally, you're carving off a week on your calendar where you're going to be spending time with this person, where you're able to get to know each other better, right? I mean, like as individuals, we all have these deep core innate desires to be known, to be seen, to be understood by other people. And it just so happens that vacations allow you the space to be able to do that better.
And the more that we plan for them, the more it becomes an easier financial lift, but the more that we can look forward to it as well. It makes me think of, we've talked about this multiple times on the show, but you were saving up for that World Cup experience. And I'm just like, man, the World Cup is coming around in November of this year. I think it's going to add some excitement even to you watching kind World Cup action on TV.
Reignite the fire a little bit.
Realizing that in, you know, 3.5 short years or something like that, you're going to be at a World Cup match of your own. And so the the thing is, planning ahead, though, is key, not just financially, but also experientially, to be able to get the most juice, right? To be able to wring the most life out of that experience that you're saving for. Yeah,
might even get me one of those jerseys.
Well, let's talk about buying stuff here for a second, too, because, Matt, I think when we talk about experiences versus stuff, like, buying stuff gets short shrift. Like, it's often considered, like, stupid. Well, spend your money on experiences. You'll be happy. If you spend your money on things, it's a waste. It's a waste. And the truth is, that's not exactly correct either. Like, experiences get all the love, but stuff, there's a meaningful place for stuff in your life. And I don't know, I guess I get it, though, because probably all of us, we've had more regrets because money we spent on physical items. Most of us don't regret nearly to the same extent money we spent on, like, a mountain retreat with some close friends. We're not like, man, I wish we hadn't done that, unless there was some sort of emotional blow up or something like that.
Which you just did recently with a bunch of buddies.
Yeah, which was so fun, and it was so cheap, but it was not an expensive.
Even better.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we went to a couple breweries, went out to eat a couple times, went on a bunch of hikes, just really hung out and caught up. Mm-hmm. And it was super joyful, well worth the money that we spent on that. But the more thoughtful that we can get about our purchases on the front end, the less likely we are to experience those expenses as being frivolous. And for most folks, that means prioritizing fewer things and things that are of higher quality, even if that means buying them used.
Sure.
So I don't know. I think, again, buying stuff gets categorized as idiotic. But the truth is, like, you know, there are some physical items that I own that mean a lot to me, for instance, like the folk art that's on my walls, or the bike that I ride every day, or my favorite pair of sneakers. Like, those are things that, like, I actually do get a lot of value from. But on the flip side of the coin, it's so much easier to thoughtlessly spend on physical goods than it is to spend on experiences. I think that's probably the rub there.
Totally agree. Yeah, I think it's easier to accumulate stuff than it is to accumulate vacations that you've gone on.
Right. Oh, I've just accumulated too many of them trips. No, said no one ever.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think another way to increase the ROI from the dollars that you spend is to consider using them to save you more of your time. A lot of folks believe that money is a limited resource, but we would disagree, because you can always make more money, but you are never going to have more time than you did yesterday.
Yeah.
And you can say that forever, perpetually. But the thing is, this too can be overdone. And if we're honest, I think sometimes we end up doing this, you know, kind of out of sheer laziness. For instance, imagine all the new apps that have appeared on your phone. And just by downloading this app, I no longer have to drive to the grocery store, or I no longer have to go and pick up my takeout anymore. Somebody else will bring it to me. And maybe they'll sit down at my table next and put it in my mouth. And
Wally style.
And help me to chew the food.
Can you also digest it for me?
But in our experience, if you can hire folks to do some of your least favorite jobs around the house, and then use that time more effectively, and I don't mean finding ways to monetize that time. I mean to actually go and do something enjoyable, like going for a hike. If that's the case, then I think this can be worth prioritizing your dollars for those sorts of expenses. But of course, your decisions on what you enjoy spending money on, combined with your income and your net worth, that's going to influence the route that you specifically take. Obviously, everyone is in a different boat. We all have different personal preferences and what it is that we like to spend our time on, but it's going to take some time to think through and to analyze what it is that's going to move the needle the most for you.
Yeah, and at some times, like, even the thing that would move the needle, you don't have the money for yet. And so you have to wait to be able to prioritize that thing. Matt, it just makes me think of going back to folk art. Mentioned that. I don't know if people know this about me, but I've mentioned it on a few episodes before. I'm kind of obsessed with folk art, which is like untrained artists making work that I think is beautiful that most people probably think looks weird. But
yeah, it's like a possum sitting on a dock with a corncob pipe in his hand.
Weird stuff like that. Like, we literally bought a painting recently of like three skunks, and people are probably like coming to my house and they're like, what is this thing? And I'm like, I find joy in it.
Are they sitting around a table playing poker?
No, but okay. That would be awesome. Right. I'm going to look for one of those. Hopefully I'll come across it soon.
It's like a nice 70s folk art, like, kind of
mashup.
Intersectional, yeah, mashup. Yes.
Well, so, but like, Emily and I, on a recent trip, we went into a folk art gallery, and a lot of these pieces, some of the really cool pieces, were like $1,200. Some of them were cheaper than that, of course.
I thought you were going to just say $12.
No. One of the pieces
these are legit folk artists.
Yeah. One of the pieces I really liked is from one of my favorite artists, Howard Finster. It was $1,200 for this awesome small piece, though. Mm-hmm. And of course, like, nah, I'm not going to do it. I don't feel like I'm in the financial position to be spending money on that yet. But we had gone to Howard Finster's house recently, Paradise Gardens in Georgia, for the Howard Finster Festival. Mm-hmm. And we bought four pieces of folk art there, all of which were $50 or less a piece. And so, yeah, so
that,
much...
That weren't Finsters. They were by other artists.
Exactly. They were by other artists. And so that it is important to note that, like you said, based on your income, based on your net worth, like what this looks like is going to be different. And maybe I'll get to the point, Matt, where dropping $1,200 for a Finster because I'm in this gallery doesn't feel like a big deal. I'm not there yet, right? Yeah. That's just not the position I'm
in. Or maybe you just didn't come across the right piece. Because I mean... You've been collecting folk art for a while now, and I feel like, I mean, personally, I think you're at the point to where you could have spent that much money, but maybe it wasn't the right piece for
you. We're
in
a bear market, Matt. We're in a bear market. No.
Like, you don't understand, my net worth has taken a plunge.
No, but it is one of those things where so much of it depends on where you're at with net worth and income and how comfortable you feel, because you might say, listen, I would love to get some more time in my life, and I don't mind paying for someone to, let's say, clean the house once a month so I can kind of take that off my plate a little bit, but you might not be in the financial position to do that yet, but that's a great goal to have, to be able to achieve that hopefully in the future at some point.
Yeah, you know, actually one other thing I want to mention too, I feel like kind of bridges the ability to spend money to save time as well as spending money on stuff. And that is, recently I've spent some money on some expensive tools. So there's sort of like this dichotomy that we're putting out there, right? Like, you can either spend money on someone to do a bunch of work at your, you know, at your house, or you're spending money on something that's going to make you smile, or, you know, something that you're going to find enjoyment out of. But I actually feel like that there's a spectrum, right? Like, on one end, you have like the total DIY route where you're going the absolute cheapest, but and then on the other end, you do have you're outsourcing that work. But I think with the right tools, like anytime you have the right tool for the job, it's going to make it much more, not only successful, but just it's going to make it a more enjoyable experience as well. And of course, it's going to save you money, because typically if you buy a tool, that's something that you can then use over and over again, as opposed to, you know, having somebody to do a job for you. So specifically, I'm thinking of, like, I bought a really nice Sawzall recently, and at our new house, there's a bunch of these like thorny olive bushes, basically. And we got a quote for this company who cuts a lot of the yards in the neighborhood to clear all that out. And it was a ton of money, like hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And I was just like, there's no way that I'm going to spend that kind of money on cutting down these bushes.
So you're going to get yourself a tool to help you do it. And you get to enjoy this new tool.
Yes. And it's not a cheap tool. Like, you know, this is like a DeWalt fancy, you know, it's a Sawzall, battery powered Sawzall. And I'll tell you what, like the blade was really expensive too. I was shocked at how expensive this, because I got a nice blade. This is a really nice pruning blade. But you know what? I've used it a bunch. That thing is still sharp.
Yeah.
And so I mentioned that because I think the right tools can allow you to not only save time, and so in a sense, you are kind of buying some of your time back. It saves you money because you're not quite spending as much money as if I would have paid a company to take care of it. But it also is just making it more enjoyable for me to, you know, like playing with the kids in the backyard, and after a while, they kind of start playing.
Scaring them with the Sawzall.
Well, they start playing on their own, and I'll grab it, and I'll cut down one of the bushes and pull it off to the side. And so I feel like that there's an ability for us to almost even like create memories where they're like, oh, there's dad again. He's going to go over there and cut down one of his bushes. The act, the chore in and of itself is sort of maybe creating some of those memories that the kids remember.
There you go.
Anyway, I wanted to mention, I feel like there is something between buying stuff as well as like kind of outsourcing or paying for some of your time back.
Okay. Yeah. I think that makes sense. Well, and I think another last thing on the spending portion of this, Matt, is that you should take joy in spending money on the things that bring you value, that bring you joy. And
I enjoyed buying that tool.
Good. Exactly. As you should. You should look at that thing now and be like, that was money well spent, instead of being like, oh man, should I have second guessing, questioning your buying decisions. And I don't know. I think at times, Matt, I was so frugal for so long, like too frugal, mm-hmm. frugal to where it hurt, that even when I bought stuff that did move the needle for me, that brought joy into my life, I found it harder to enjoy than I should have, because I was always questioning whether or not I should have spent the money. And I think I'm not the only person in that boat. There are other How to Money listeners who are frugal to that point. And actually, it was our episode when we talked with Ken Honda. That was episode 385. And some of the things he said were really, really helpful to me. And the way I internalized it was, instead of trying to spend as little money as possible and then getting an ulcer, let's say, every time I did spend money, being stressed every time I bought something, even if it was meaningful to me, that conversation has helped me to focus on enjoying the intentional spending that I am doing. Seeing it as a good thing, being thankful for the money that's come into my life that I can use to pursue things that matter. And I'm not sure how many of our listeners fall into that, like, super frugal camp, like frugal where it hurts.
I bet there's enough folks out there who, yeah, they
but
feel
you've
a similar
reorient.
Conviction.
Yeah, you got to reorient and figure that out, because the longer you keep that mindset hanging around, the more difficult it is going to be for you to part with money on things that matter. And then to be able to even enjoy the things that you do buy, that you should be able to appreciate, but sometimes you find it difficult because you realize it costs you money. And that's okay. I think you just have to realize that's okay, and you should be able to be thankful for that purchase without beating yourself up over it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you said be thankful. I feel like that's one of the things he said, was to literally look at money and to literally say thank you to it for the value that it's about to bring into your life on the things that you are going to spend your money on.
It just changes your experience as you're buying things. And it sounded a little hokey to me, I think, at the time when he said it. But yeah, when you swipe your card or however it is that you're spending money,
exactly,
being able to say thank you and be appreciative for it kind of changes your interaction to the thing that you're buying.
Totally. Yeah. So we just kind of talked through some of the different ways to approach spending money in a way that's going to move the needle in your life. You know, hopefully, you are, like, you do reach the end of your life and maybe you're lying there in your deathbed and you're surrounded by people who love you.
And awesome folk art.
People who have, brought so much meaning and joy to your life as opposed to just piles of cash. And maybe it is that Finster that you went back and purchased, Joel, and you've got it there on the hospital wall.
Hanging right over me.
And so that's one thing that you can do with your money. But what else can you do with your money? We have a couple other suggestions for you, and we'll get to those right after this.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues, like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach.
Do.
Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch. They make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney.
and you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for your extended 30-day free trial. Go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
All right, Matt, let's keep going. Let's talk about dying destitute. That's what we're talking about on this episode. And I think we gave some helpful framework for spending on things that matter to you, for then taking joy in the spending that you're doing instead of haranguing yourself basically for every dime or nickel that you're parting with. But let's talk about, when we're talking about like dying with zero, I think part of kind of what we're honing in on, despite the title, in fact, I don't think dying destitute, that, like, we've made jokes about this, but it's not exactly what we're looking to aim for. Like, literally spending our last dime as we're breathing our last breath, because that's kind of impossible to make happen. But, and especially since we don't know how long we're actually going to live, and you know, rapid,
just keep, like, you keep a stack of your final like $100 bills, and just like right at the last second you're like, here.
Exactly.
Then you kick it.
Yes. I mean, that'd be amazing if you could time it that way. Well, and the truth is, Matt, rapid medical progress, it could mean lots of us living past 100 years old.
True, actually.
More of us. I mean, there's people living into their 115 plus years old. Not many, but more that could be in store for more people. Or even, I don't know, maybe, you know, harvesting my brain to live in some sort of goo and I'm still sentient. I don't know what that's going to look like. But really, it's impossible to make a financial plan that allows us to spend our last remaining dollars on the actual last day of our lives. And although there are some financial instruments, insurance-like annuities mostly, that can help you take the money you've saved and turn it into a regular income stream. But a lot of those are actually overly complex and they cost too much money, we would say. There's just no financial product in existence that can allow you to perfectly tackle this conundrum. But it's just worth mentioning, though, that because if you're looking for an easy way to ensure that your account balance hits zero, you know, right as you're passing away, nothing of the sort exists. Some financial padding is always needed. And so you can never be so frivolous, right, that you're spending it all down, hoping to get the timing right, or that you can buy the perfect financial product to ensure that you're maximizing every single dollar. Like, there's some amount of margin needed all along the way.
And so the question still remains then, so other than spending your money, hopefully in an unostentatious way, what else are you going to do with your money? And kind of going back to how I kicked the episode off with Andrew Carnegie. So this is back. He's the richest man in the world at the time. He noted that there were basically three things that you could do with your excess wealth once you are nearing the end of your life. You could either leave it to your kids, you can designate that it goes to charity or to other public purposes once you die, or you can determine where it should go while you are still alive, where you're able to see the good that it's going to be able to provide your community or even for your entire country or the world if you're a high roller like Andrew Carnegie. And so he quickly dismisses leaving large amounts of wealth to your kids because it often, and these are his words, this is a quote, he said that it often works more for the injury rather than the good of the recipients, which are some incredibly wise words that he wrote back in 1889.
Yeah, talking about ancient wisdom.
Yeah, this is way before research that we have today showing that it's something like 70% of inherited wealth is lost in the second generation, and then 90% is lost in the third generation. So oftentimes the money, larger amounts of money like this that we leave to our kids, get squandered, and it does them more harm than good.
Yeah, and I threw just a tiny bit of shade at Cody Sanchez earlier, our recent guest, who, by the way, absolutely love what she does. Let me say the opposite.
Sounds like you got regrets.
No. She talked about second generation immigrant mentality and how giving your kids, you're setting your kids up for failure if you give them too nice of things, right? If you're not asking enough of them when they're young. And I think that's important. I think that goes directly in line with Andrew Carnegie's quote here that basically, yeah, you're doing more harm than good for your kids if you leave them vast sums of money. And it doesn't mean that you don't give them anything and that you don't give them some money maybe along the way, especially while you're still living, when you can see the benefit, the fruition of the money that you're giving to them.
Sure.
And
I'm still stuck on the fact that you keep saying Carnegie as opposed to Carnegie.
I think it is Carnegie.
I like saying Carnegie.
Okay.
I don't know who's right, but
tomato, tomato. Okay. We can say it however we want. Well, basically he didn't think of leaving your money to charity after you die. And so basically, you know, the best remaining option is to give money along the way before you ultimately pass on. And man, it makes me think, like, you know, you and I, we have a lot of affinity for Warren Buffett, but we're not keen to have as much money as he's got, and we don't really love his method for passing it on. Instead of amassing the biggest pile possible and then leaving it behind to your favorite charities, you and I, we'd like to see some of that work, that money at work, while we can see the effects of it, even if that means there's less money to give. Like, Warren is obsessed with compounding returns, and because of that, he thinks he can do the most good by investing and creating the most amount of wealth that he can leave when he does pass. But we think there's even more value for the giver and for the recipient to be able to give along the way when you're still living.
Yeah, I think there's something a little more powerful when you are choosing to give away something that you could instead keep for yourself, right? Like, there's a certain vulnerability in giving up something as opposed to just giving what's left over. Like, literally, it feels like leftovers, right? If you until you die, you're kind of like, all right, well, I can't use that anymore, so why don't you go ahead and help yourself?
And in Warren's case, it's a whole lot of scraps from the table,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Still.
Well, and not to say that he's got the Buffett Foundation. Like, there is he's seriously giving away a lot of money, but not nearly as much in proportion to his actual net worth. Yeah. And he's at the stage in life to where, like, Andrew Carnegie, as you know him, but like, he spent the last 20 years of his life, I think, just unleashing his wealth and starting all the things that he donated his money to. And someone like Warren Buffett is, I don't know, like, how much longer does he have? It seems obvious to me.
I hope a lot longer.
I hope a lot longer as well. Absolutely.
Knows?
But he is one old dude. And you would think that you would want to start shifting gears in order to see your money firsthand impact people positively. And so now I kind of feel like we're being a little too hard on Warren Buffett because, you know, he has done a whole lot of good. But it's worth mentioning as well, though, that, like, generosity, it doesn't always have to look like giving vast sums of money to nonprofits, you know, like spending your money on others who you care about. Like, that's what we're talking about. Our friend Jack over at the blog Young Money, his grandma, she offered to take him anywhere in the world back when, like, he was 11 years old. He wrote about this recently. And so for him, going on an African safari as a preteen, that had a massive eye-opening impact on his life. So do you think he would have preferred a larger inheritance or instead to have those rich memories and that incredible experience with his grandma?
Yeah, grandma, how about don't buy me the plane ticket or the hotel room and then stick it in the S&P and then give me the compounded rate of return once you do eventually die?
Yep.
Like, no, the memory matters more than that.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, this is not a super simple thing to balance as well. You know, like, being more generous with those closest to us now versus socking away gobs more money. But it is something that we should all consider more closely. And I think it's important to note that if you are financially able, I think something as simple as just buying breakfast for a friend or buying a beer, like, that can be a meaningful gesture. It doesn't have to be this epic trip, like, halfway around the world where you are planning for months or years in advance. It can be something as small as just kind of covering the ticket.
Yeah, agreed. That goes
covering
a long way.
Tab.
Like, when someone does that for me, like, when a friend buys a round of beers, it just, what a sweet thing. That generosity goes a long way, right? And it's such a good relational building thing that if you can do that for other people, it makes me want to then do that more for others. So it's like, let me grab lunch here. Let me pay for breakfast.
Let me grab your beer.
Yeah, exactly. Send stuff to people. Write more thank you letters. All that kind of stuff. Well, and when we're talking about dying destitute here, Matt, like, we're not just talking about, like, literally passing away with $0 in your bank account. We're talking about maximizing every dollar that you have in this life. We're talking about focusing more on what that dollar can do to create better results for you now. And how that means you should probably be thinking less about amassing this gigantic nest egg. And I think some of those retirement commercials, especially from like 10 years ago, where it's like, what's your retirement number? It like gets people in a tizzy, man. They get worried. Like, I've got to save up $3.5 million. That's so much money to be able to afford my lifestyle in retirement. And I think it's not that we shouldn't. Of course, we talk a lot about saving and investing for your future. It's really important. But I think when we focus so much on that we forget about maximizing our dollars dollars in the here and now, we're missing out on something. And so you and I, we still believe that the how to money way that we've espoused for years now is the best happy medium route to financial and personal success. You know, saving and investing regularly so that we have more flexibility and options. That's a crucial part of it, because we never know what sort of storm could be coming on the horizon. And you never know what kind of options you're going to want to have in the future. But at the same time, it's massively important to pick a couple of craft beer equivalents. You know, ask yourself the question, where does spending more money move the needle for you in a major way? And when you find those craft beer equivalents, it makes it easier to cut back in those other areas of your life, funneling more money towards the things that matter in the here and now, and also towards your future long-term investments that are going to give you those additional options as you do get older.
That's right. Yeah, I think this is a good reminder that the window of opportunity to make more memories isn't as long as you think it is. You know, like just the fact, like just being aware that your time is limited, I think that can have an impact on how you experience it now. It makes me think of like our oldest daughter. I mean, she's 9 years old. We're literally halfway through her living with us. Well, we're at the halfway point. Beyond that, she's likely going to go off to college and we'll never see her every single day like we do to, you know, now. It seems crazy to think that because she's just a little kid.
Hey, man.
She ain't going to be a little kid for all that much longer.
She might take a gap year and go straight into entrepreneurship though, okay?
And she's going to be like, hey, can I... Let's tack on one more year while I get the startup.
She's like, Dad,
together.
I actually listened to that episode that you did about is the cost of college worth it? And so I think I'm going to pass.
Hey, I would be okay with that. Taking that, more people need to consider taking that gap year because, like, who the heck knows what they actually want to be when they're 18 years old? And in particular, signing up for a boatload of debt in order to accomplish that thing, that goal that might seriously change. But, you know, we're covering this topic today because your life is made up of all sorts of experiences and different memories and individuals, people in your life. Money is a crucial piece of that puzzle when it comes to having the freedom to enjoy all of the above. The more financial freedom, the more financially independent we are, the more that we have the ability to design our lives just as we see fit. But we can focus too much on the money side of things, on that aspect, where we're building up a massive nest egg for some distant, far-off future, and not enough on how to actually use that tool, to use that money today. We're often using money itself as the measuring stick when life satisfaction is a far better measure. And so at the same time, as we're talking through this, you might be thinking, well, how the heck am I supposed to figure out, like, what? This seems like maybe a very tall wall to get over. You know, it's just like how
a very personal endeavor to partake in.
Absolutely. But simultaneously, we want you to know that we are here with you. And not too long ago, we put together this money mission statement. Essentially, it's a worksheet where we just ask some different questions that we think is going to be able to help you to get closer to the things that are most important in your life that are going to ultimately help you to direct where it is that you are spending your money, where it is that you are spending your time. And so we've got a link to that worksheet up on the website, up in the show notes for this episode. But we think if you were to spend 30 minutes, maybe even an hour thinking through some of these things, or maybe download it, you read all the questions and then just let it start to stew in your mind. Like,
marinate,
you don't have to sit down and immediately complete it, but just start chewing on these questions. And I think that could go a really long ways when it comes to the satisfaction that you're able to glean from this, the limited amount of time that we have here on Earth, Joel.
Yeah, that balance, that pendulum, man. I feel like, especially in the personal finance realm, it's really hard to talk about that well. And I think part of the reason for that is because money is seen as the end goal in so many of these discussions. But the truth is, money is just a tool. Money is a necessary reality of life. But the more we prioritize money itself, the more we let some of those more important things slip away. Mm. And so it's important to bring it back to what actually matters. And so hopefully this episode helps you do that. And hopefully the how to money mission statement that Matt just talked about is one of those things that can help you kind of hone in on that a little bit more personally. Again, we'll link to that in the show notes. But Matt, let's mention the beer that we had on this episode. Let's get back to that. This one was Raspberry Blush by McKellar. Speaking of things that matter, good beer, of course, matters. And it is craft beer is our craft beer equivalent. So what were your thoughts on this raspberry coffee Berliner Weiss?
Yeah, so what's crazy is I did not read the label before I took my first sip. And I thought, what is up with this beer? Because the coffee notes, they are present.
Yes.
And before I knew that it was coffee, it almost, to me, tasted like this kind of mineraliness. Like imagine Thanksgiving Day spices, like some of the different kind of very savory types of flavors that you might expect included in a Thanksgiving Day dinner. Like it almost had like this black peppery like flavor.
Mixed with some bay leaves or something.
Yeah. But then I read the label and it said coffee. I was like, oh, that's what it is. It's coffee. But yeah, this is a really unique beer. I'm trying to figure out if it's. I was trying to avoid.
Can't tell if you like it or not.
Like, you know, there's like some of those cheap coffees out there.
Yeah,
and they've got like the sort of cheap flavors, kind of like mixed in. I was trying to avoid those thoughts.
McKellar, there's no way McKellar is using cheap coffee. This had to be good.
No, it's not that they're using cheap coffee, but there's cheap coffee that exists that are just feel like that they're just pumped full of artificial flavoring.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying not to think down that path. Instead, okay. I'm like, oh no, this is a quality German wheat beer that's infused with some fruit, with some raspberry. But yeah, I feel like this one was pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it.
I'm guessing you probably liked it more than
I liked it a lot. Yeah, I did. And it was a really interesting combo, coffee and fruits. But this one was light and refreshing. And the first time I had like a coffee sour, I think it was actually a Wicked Weed one. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to like this. Like coffee in a sour beer sounds repulsive. Coffee in a stout sounds delicious.
Yep.
Like the roasty notes, right? It makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think
I believe that.
But I think coffee in a sour, actually, for me, it kind of works. And I dug this one.
Nice. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I'm down to try anything. Like, will I go out and, you know, buy this beer again? No, probably not. But I'm very experimental. I'm down to pretty much try any beer out there at least once.
Yeah. Yeah. We tried a pickle beer recently. And I don't know if I'll ever try another one of those games. We'll see.
So I took home the extra. And
Kate like it?
She has not tried it yet. Okay. I keep forgetting to be like, pop it, pour it for her, and just like slide it across the table and be like, hey babe, I got one for you.
Yeah, take a sip of this, let me know what you think. Alright, that's going to do it for this episode. We hope you found it helpful. Again, we'll put the link to that mission statement
worksheet
in our show notes at howmoney.com.
I wanted to mention the artwork too with McKellar. So I hate to take it back to the beer, but like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's kind of got like this mid-century kind of modern, like it's like mid-century Dutch or something, I don't know. Yeah. Like, because it's very European looking.
It's delightful, the colors are beautiful.
Yeah, like one of the things we were saying is that I would totally be willing to take their label artwork and hang it up at least here in the studio.
Or if McKellar gave me like an unending supply of t-shirts with their different
designs.
Yeah,
there,
I would wear them every day.
Totally.
Every day of the week.
Awesome, yeah.
They're so cool.
Very cool. You can, if you want to see this label, you can either head to the show notes or we'll post it up on Instagram as well at How to Money Pod.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, let's end it for real.
Okay, all right. That's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.